Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Men, Let's Have a Conversation. Today, we are diving deep into the topics around masculine and feminine energy, building a strong relationship, and creating a life by design. I brought on a good friend that helped me while I was in Australia, Leif Warren Thompson. He actually was one of the first people who got me on my men's work personal development journey with No More Mr. Nice Guy, the book. His work is phenomenal, and just his kind of unique style and how he blends everything in together just really spoke to me. So decided to bring Blake on today because that he helps people create a balanced, fulfilling life through his work called Life by Design. Yeah, Blake, just going back and looking at you, like there was a point in your life where you were a real punching bag at one stage. So like to just take us and their audience through, okay, there and like, figuring out that I can actually start to create my life, going from where you were to actually realizing that, just to talk about that a bit.
Yeah, it's multi-layered, but I think the core of it was we all have different tipping points in which we decide to make big changes. And unfortunately for a lot of blokes, that's quite a dark, heavy space that they need to get to before they really take change. And it really, for me, it snapped me out of this autopilot, which so many of us are on, and really started to help me increase my awareness and make sense of like, how did I get to where I was? So in terms of, I guess, the history, I think it's about 5 years ago now that I was in Sydney, and for kind of 12 out of 13 years that I was in the fitness space, loved it. And then one day it died on me and I kept going for another 12 months. And what eventuated from that slow death of my purpose, and purpose is obviously a really important part for guys, was really like just this complete capitulation of everything that I was, everything that I had, and everything that I knew. And that started with bankruptcy in my business. Yeah, I think it was maybe 2018. I need to go over the dates, but 2018. And at the time, that was like rock bottom for me. Someone who prides himself on work, prides himself on business, prides himself on purpose. The ego death and the humbling and the pride that took a hit when you file for bankruptcy was like significant for me. And I wouldn't really talk to anyone about it. It was a lot of pressure at the time for my girlfriend because she was the only one that I really spoke about it, just because I had so much shame. And having spoken to a lot of people around this topic since, because I've been very open in talking about it, there's actually blokes that prefer to take their own life than wave the white flag when it comes to a failing business as such. But for me, this ended up just becoming the first domino to fall. At the time, I felt like I was going through a period of growth and I was feeling really lonely. So not only had my business capitulated from a bankruptcy point of view, I was feeling super lonely. And then it just was one thing after another. So off the back of that, I felt the need for a new change. And my girlfriend and I at the time moved to Melbourne. In Melbourne, I got hired and fired from 3 jobs in the space of 6 months. I applied for over 50 jobs and got rejected. My girlfriend pulled the pin on our relationship. My car blew up. My computer got stolen. I blew out to 90 kilos, so 7 kilos heavier than I normally am. And literally everything that I tried to hold on to in terms of both the physical and also my sense of self and my identity just completely crumbled to the point where the last piece to go was my physical health. The one thing that I could always count on was my physical health. And just prior to that, probably 1 week before that, I was saying to one of my best mates and former business partner, Chinoa, I was like, at least I've still got my mental and physical health. And it literally felt like everything was stripped away from me. And God bless him, there was no way I had my mental health. He didn't say anything, but there's no way I had my mental health. And then the next week I ended up in hospital with what they thought was meningococcal. And it wasn't until then that I really surrendered. And for me, my understanding of surrender at that time felt like I was giving up, but I was trying to push, I was trying to recreate, I was trying to find a new version of me, and it just kept on getting hit. And it was literally me on a hospital bed going, okay, I'm waving the white flag. I don't know what's going on. I don't know when this is going to end. I'm trying to hold on to some kind of hope that things will get better. And then within a week, it really became clear to me that I wanted to move into the coaching space. And from there, from start to finish, was probably about 18 months down to rock bottom. And then just as quickly, the next 18 months evolved to the best I've ever been. So it was a 3-year period of like extreme lows to the point where I was like, is this even worth it? And I know plenty of other blokes have been in that position and had those thoughts, to the point where I was on absolute high 24/7 with the new life that I'd created.
And at rock bottom, what were the things that you were kind of doing to pull yourself out? Like, how did you start to create that momentum? So you found coaching, or was there something there that was like, okay, this is like, I wanted this and I can make a movement, I can make another step? Was it like community, or what were the kind of key things that were around you that were?
I think, as dark as this sounds, I think one of the things that kept me alive was having a deep understanding of what I valued. Because when I looked at my future, it was really bleak. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know where I was going. At the time, I was 34 and I just moved home with my mum. My mum and I don't have the best relationship, albeit it's better than it used to be. And like, it's grim. It's 30, you're 34. On a deep evolutionary level, we have a need and a desire for purpose. I didn't have purpose. I didn't have money. I didn't really feel like I had a huge amount of close friendships at the time, and I had no direction. And then I am a 34-year-old moving back into his family house because he doesn't know where else to go or what to do. So every time my mind wandered to the future, I'd get the most crippling anxiety, to the point where I was like, okay, I just need to focus on the day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when this heaviness is going to lift. I don't know how it's going to lift, but I know that if I can control the controllables on a daily basis, that at some stage things are going to lift. So for me, that was training every day. That was eating well. That was getting some kind of nature, generally the beach. That was personal development, which is really big for me, sleep, and then connection. And again, the connections that I had at the time, I'm not that close to many of them anymore. And that's no kind of right or wrong, just the natural evolution of people. But it was enough for me to hold on to something. And even though it didn't feel like the levels of connection that I have in my world now, and everyone's doing their best to connect and communicate, it was enough for me just to go, okay, here's how I can win today. And even if I got to the end of that day and nothing had moved forward in terms of what I wanted to do with my life, I was like, okay, I've ticked those boxes, and tomorrow will be a new day, and tomorrow I'll do the same thing. So those were the things that I like held on to that gave me some kind of, I guess some kind of hope, but also just gave me some kind of energy, albeit little amount on a daily basis.
Yeah, man, just when you're speaking there, because back when I was 23, that I had like one of those moments, and I had to go into psychotherapy. I would write it down, and I was having actually suicidal thoughts for once beforehand, but I never really allowed myself to admit it. And obviously that brave face, fortunately enough, I found writing, freelancing, and that gave me some sort of thing. This is some sort of thing if I put my energy into this, and fortunately enough, it was that case. In terms of then the coming to actually starting to create, say, your life by design, that's how to lead me into that. What was it? Was there a moment it's like, hold on a second, I can actually create this marvelous life that I have created over the last 4 years? And what was it? What was the kind of moment where it was like, just doing this stuff can actually go the direction I want to go in my life?
Yeah, the way that I look at it, and even when I'm working with people these days, is it's really important to have a wide variety of areas that you're doing well in. I look at a lot of men that I work with and they're quite one-dimensional. And what I mean by that is they're good with their career. Awesome. Yeah. That's one leg. But if you can't maintain healthy relationship with your partner, if your kids don't see you, if you're 20 kilos overweight, you've got no energy, like that's, you're not really, albeit society's very sloppy definition of success is career, I don't see that as success if the rest of your life is failing. So I just took time to assess every area of my life and work out what I wanted. And sometimes it's hard to work out what you want. But if you can start with what you don't want, you can start to move forward from there. So I knew I didn't want to be in the fitness space anymore. I knew that while I had such beautiful people around me, I didn't necessarily resonate with them anymore. I knew that I didn't want to be in Sydney or Melbourne or Adelaide, and I really felt called to Byron. That was where I started working out what I didn't want. And then it just literally one day it dropped in that I wanted to move into the coaching space. And at that time, obviously I'd been beaten down to a certain degree around business because I filed for bankruptcy. And also I didn't have a huge amount of like energy in the tank. So the thought of starting my own business again after what I've just been through felt like a mountain. So I was like, okay, if I'm going to start a coaching business, I'd love to be able to feed off someone else. I'd love to be able to do it with someone else. And that was when I reached out to Genoa at the time. He was a meditation teacher and a former business partner guy called Dylan. I was like, do you guys want to do this thing around kind of men's work? And an element of that for me was a selfish element of I didn't have many blokes in my world that I really connected with on a level other than the kind of the surface level. So there's a part of me that wanted to find other like-minded guys who are interested in talking about more than just the surface level. So Momentum, our former business, really on a selfish level was one of the things that helped me get out of the hole. And just being able to share my story and share with other like-minded guys was what I needed at the time. And that served us really well up until last year. And then John and I had a really good chat. This doesn't feel aligned for us anymore with where we're at and where we want to go. And that's when we decided to part ways. And it was massive for us. The big business aside, it was massive for us both on a personal level in terms of our own evolution, our own growth. And obviously, I've been very fortunate to have so many amazing people come into our world. You came in as well. We met so many unreal dudes through the course of that 4 years. So it served us well beyond just the kind of the business sense.
And say if you were to say to somebody, okay, I'm in around that area, would you say, so start just knocking off the things you don't want and start creating a life that by design, you're really looking at your values and what you want to create around it. Do you have key points, or how do you even know you're not even living, but you call it life by default? If you were to say to somebody, okay, these are kind of the checklists, I realize, yeah, okay, I am living life by default. And what is it like to switch into life by design?
The first one to be really mindful of, and we can look into the science stuff if you want, but most people are on autopilot. And that's a really good sign that it's life by default. So they do the same thing each and every day, and they don't give it a huge amount of like awareness to go, does this light me up? Am I enjoying this? Am I like energized? And one of the first things that you can start to do to bring awareness to that is literally grab a piece of paper, divide it in half, and on one side write drainers, and on the other side write energizers. And for 2 weeks, just pay attention to what like energizes you and what drains you. And in your head, you might go, oh, this person has been my best friend for 15 years. And then you look at it and go, well, fuck, actually, we don't have anything in common anymore. We're just friends by association because we went to school together, or we're friends by association because we played in the same footy club. But I don't feel seen. I don't feel heard. I don't feel connected. I don't feel inspired. I don't feel our conversations are engaging. And I'm just in the default of, oh, this makes sense. Another way to think about the default is there's a default path for everyone. And that default path is go to school, go to university, buy a house, get married, have 2.5 kids, a white picket fence, and a Labrador. And while that serves a small portion of people, there's a big portion of people that are just doing it because they don't fucking know any other way. They don't take time to go, do I actually want this? Is this right for me? Do I want this career? Do it, like, just asking those questions. So the moment that you start to shift from that kind of groundhog day autopilot to a little bit of awareness and asking more questions of, do I actually want this? is the moment that you start to break free. And breaking free from the conditioning and the programming isn't something that happens overnight. And there's different levels of breaking free. But the more that you can break free, the more you start to take agency over your life, the more you start to create a level of autonomy and start to choose. And it can feel really challenging in the early stages because the majority of people have gone one way and you're like, I actually don't think that's for me. And you start heading the other way. And there, one of the things I've seen a lot of, and I think you might have even experienced this, we see this a lot with clients, is for those that choose a path that is individual to them and for those that choose a path that is growth, there's often loneliness gaps, which is the gap between the former version of you and what kind of worked for you at that time and the new version. And I found this 3 or 4 times. Like when I go through a big growth spur, I don't necessarily resonate so much with the people that were once in my world. And again, no one's right or wrong. It's just that I'm looking for a level of connection that may not be available anymore. Like even when we have kids, Shani and I, next year, that will no doubt change things again in terms of we'll be looking for more parents. We've got a lot of kind of parents around us, but we'll be looking for more parents who understand our journey and it makes sense. And again, no one's right or wrong, but you just go through different stages. And not everyone goes through those stages. There's a lot of people that I went to school with that I obviously, I'm not that close with anymore, but they haven't changed much in 20 years. Their friendship groups probably haven't changed that much in 20 years either. And again, for people that are okay with standing still, that's cool. That's not my journey. But those that choose the path of growth and evolution and deep truth, that's one of the challenges that comes with that, is the coming and going of different connections, communities, based on where you're at and what is relevant to you at that time.
And with Shani there, because you just brushed off her, she's obviously gone through the development of us with you. So just to dive into a bit of that, going through that with somebody else, is it two separate people going through their own personal development and they coming together? Or how does that form within the relationship? Because obviously, by the looks of things and stuff, like online and stuff, you seem to have it fairly well got. But you also talked about those crucial conversations and stuff online as well, about like hard conversations make easy times is one of your mottos. And so just because I know a lot of guys and stuff as well, hard conversations, they're actually little to be had these days. Just to dive a bit into that side of things as well, like having those conversations on your personal development journey.
One of the things that's been really big for us, and this confuses couples when I work with initially, and I've explained how Shani and I work, is most of our work as a couple is done individually. So we're constantly growing and evolving. And with all the different coaches and healers and shamans and therapists that we've worked with, it's very rare that we're actually in the same room doing sessions together. We're off doing our own healing, and two people that are healing and whole as individuals make for a much easier and more united relationship. So I think we've done a couple of MDMA therapy sessions together. I think we might have done 1 or 2 other sessions together. Like, being together for 3 years and probably only done 4 sessions together, most of our work is individual. And mate, for me, and again, there's no right or wrong, I couldn't date, marry, or bring kids into the world with someone who didn't really value growth, healing, expansion. Like, that's my number one value. And with all due respect, there's a lot of people that talk about wanting to grow and wanting to heal and wanting to evolve. But that their version of that is like double tapping a fucking Instagram post that talks about relationships. Like, it's, there's a level of growth, healing, and expansion that I want that isn't for the majority of people. And I wouldn't be able to date most people in the world these days. Like, the pool would be so small. And I feel very fortunate that Shani is on the exact same page. Like, neither of us, dude, would be able to date the general population just because of the way that we do life, what we want, the standards that we hold for our relationship, etc. Like, it just wouldn't work. One of the key elements to that is the communication, and I'm sure we can all say it so many times that we've heard communication is the key. But it really is. And every Sunday we have a check-in on our relationship thing we call Rituals of Connection. And that's an opportunity for us to check in as individuals, like kind of talk through our week, but also check in with where our relationship's at. And those hard conversations that we have every week, probably every fortnight or every 3 weeks, there's a lot of them. We have the conversation every week, but they're not always like hard. Sometimes a week's just a week, means that our relationship stays pretty light in terms of the overall energy. And that's not something that I could say has been the case in previous relationships. I would say I was pretty avoidant when it came to having the tough conversations in previous relationships. And that just, you can sense it. If you know what you're looking for, you can sense a relationship where things are going unsaid because there's this bitterness, there's this resentment, there's this energetic block between couples. You're like, how about you guys just go and have a chat and get everything out on the table so that you can clean up this unhealthy energy? And I don't know about you, but I see it everywhere. And sometimes it's subtle, sometimes it's really obvious. But maybe for Shani and I have been doing it every week for 3 weeks, I can see when there's things that have been left unsaid and it doesn't serve anyone. And yes, 100%, some of the conversations are like hard, but it means that the relationship isn't hard. If we're having those conversations every week, then there's a lightness and a freedom that comes in our relationship. And again, this isn't right or wrong, but I'm not interested in dating someone who's not okay with taking on feedback and growing and evolving. And Shani is elite at that, to the point where I haven't had to repeat myself ever. If there's some kind of feedback that I give to her, there's such a level of awareness and ownership from her side of things that she just goes and makes the change, and vice versa. Nothing I find more draining than a relationship that is going over the same problem time and time again. Oh, and I've been there. I have experienced it where you're like, are we fucking back here again? Yeah. This is the 10th time we've spoken about it. So to just have a level of liberation that comes with, hey, babe, this is what's going on. This isn't sitting well with me. She's cool. And it's done. Dust off. We're good to go. Mate, that is freedom and liberation at its finest. Again, do not understand how people do relationships where you're going over the same problem time and time again. Life's too hard. Life's hard enough as it is without being fucking exhausted from your partner who isn't making change.
Yeah. And was that from the get-go? Did you communicate this? Hey, listen, this is Blake here, and this is what I do. This is the level of work I do on myself. And that was from like the get-go within the relationship. Was it that was communicated early stages, or was it slowly, mysteriously brought into the relationship?
I have studied relationship coaching through a group called the Gottman Institute, which is internationally recognized as one of the best kind of relationship institutes in the world. And I originally got the idea from them of like rituals of connection. So because we knew each other for 6 months before we started dating, we implemented that from the first week. Whoa, and some people are going to go, what the fuck? You're having those conversations from week one? Yes. And we also had 6 months of knowing each other prior to that. What is the biggest or one of the biggest problems I see with couples is they're only having these conversations when stuff's wrong. And really wrong. E.g., you've been sitting on this thing for 2 months, 3 months, and you just stink of resentment and bitterness. And then it comes out, and you imagine a pressure cooker where you've been pushing something down, and then it just fucking explodes, and it just comes out, often comes out the wrong way, and it's gnarly. Whereas because we do it every single week, and dude, we haven't missed a week in 3 years. If for whatever reason, like I was in Vipassana, silent meditation, I was offline, we would do it the Monday or a couple of days after. Because it's done every week, nothing gets a chance to build up. And if you're looking for one of the quickest ways to build or to kill off chemistry within the relationship, then put yourself in a position where you're not communicating properly. And that will happen really quickly. So being in that position where we just talk every week, for me, is like a form of emotional hygiene. We all have personal hygiene where we're brushing our teeth, doing our hair, etc. But most people don't have a regular practice of emotional hygiene, a way in which they can move through their emotions. So breathwork's been big for me. Communication's been big for me. As psychedelics has been big for me. Constantly lightening my emotional load, my emotional hygiene, so that our relationship stays clean.
Interesting. Emotional hygiene. That's a very good coin dust.
Is that everyone needs an emotional hygiene practice.
I need an emotional shower.
People need it, mate. You can see it. And obviously we're talking kind of blokes here. Like, when you're not communicating, it becomes really easy to see how someone gets to a bad place, a dark place, yeah, where they don't have a therapist, where they don't have mates, where they don't have a partner they can talk to. It's, you need emotional hygiene. We've all been hit at some stage with some kind of challenge in life. And obviously there's different levels of hardship that people have been through, but everyone's copped something at some stage. And if you aren't working through it, you're not talking through it, then you're becoming dirty. And I really do mean that from an emotional hygiene point of view. Like, you're building up resentment, anger, and you become a ticking time bomb. And here's how I think about it. Like, we'll look to bring kids into the world next year. If I don't have a regular emotional hygiene practice, I'm a liability. I'm a liability to myself. I'm a liability to Shani. And then I will become a liability to kids. And that's, who the fuck am I to push my stuff onto kids because I wasn't prepared to work through my own stuff? And this one gets me, and I don't even have kids yet. I reckon I'm going to take it to another level when I have kids. But the laziness of society, and I fucking mean this deep in my bones, the laziness of society to go and spend like $50,000 on your new Bentley, and yet you're fucking dysfunctional as anything, and you won't put any money into therapy, and all your shit is being passed on to your kids. That is fucking, that's disgusting in my eyes. And that's a big portion of the population. Oh, I'm just going to go and buy this and that. Mate, you are so fucking dysfunctional, and your selfishness to pass that down to your kids and make their life harder because you're not prepared to do the work, pull your fucking head in. If people had to pass a test to bring kids into the world, we wouldn't have that many kids. Bill Gates wants his population control. You would just implement some kind of psychological test, and there'd be a lot of people that wouldn't pass it.
There wouldn't be. I know here in Ireland, like, we, this culture, not talking about things. And then there's a lot of suppression done through alcohol and that sort of area as well, because you want to find something to soothe that emotional release. So it is fascinating. I also find fascinating that a lot of guys, I find fascinating a lot of guys talk about, oh, I can't go to therapy, I can't, like, I won't be talking about my feelings. And it doesn't mean you have to get wishy-washy, like with men's work and stuff like that. It doesn't mean you have to get wishy-washy, you're about it, like. But then again, a lot of entrepreneurs, successful people, straight to the therapist or straight to a coach or straight to somebody about their mindset. No bother sitting down for 2 hours paying the big bang for them. Like, a lot of people that run that space, that's a kind of successful thing. So I find that super fascinating how the people that have no, and again, we talk about their awareness. They're not aware of the actual power and be introduced to it. It's that awareness that they don't. And then the people that have some bit of awareness, they're all over it. I find that super fascinating as well.
The other thing, and again, each to their own, and I've made this mistake in my previous relationship, is, it's not fair on your partner. It's not fair on your partner for them to be the only resource and tool and outlet for you to talk to. Yeah. That's not great for the relationship. Cool. 100% all blokes need to learn how to communicate better. The majority of blokes need to learn how to communicate better. And it's a lot of weight if all of that weight is on your partner. And again, I needed to apologize to my ex because that was her when I was in my darkest, and she didn't have a manual of how to help a bloke through this when he's putting all this weight on and he's just carrying a heavy load. But it's not fair. That's what your therapists are for. That's what your mates are for, is to share the load, because it will wear thin on your relationship if your partner is the only one who knows about this or who you're communicating to. So not only do I get really wound up about people that aren't prepared to do the work, when they have kids, but also, dude, do the work for your fucking partner. It's heavy on them.
But not even your partner. You have your friends as well. If you have female friends, and I found this personally, especially in the last year, that with female friends, because I had no group of men around me, we're all in the same kind of boat. What I'm doing, we do call on a Thursday where we're talking about things, and there's that space there where you're around men that are there. It's just easier to talk to them about things, and they're easier to pick you up about it. And because I'm offloading into kind of a more healthy, stable environment, like the relationships with even my friends that are just women has gotten way better, because it's not dumping on them at all. Like, there's no, and I don't go there about certain conversations in my life. I go to the guys about it. And it's just, the thing is, you have to have those guys, like community, and you have momentum there. I know you have a phenomenal group around you. And that kind of brings that kind of masculine power out on you, which is the next thing I want to talk to you about, is this idea of what is that masculine power and how you get that from your group and how that also develops and betters your life then.
The first thing to speak to about that is there's a difference between being around the blokes and being around a certain kind of bloke or blokes that will hold you accountable to a higher standard.
Yeah.
And this gets messy for some people. And this isn't me saying things are right or wrong, but like blokes that you go to the pub with, talk surface level and spend half the night in the toilet doing bags is very different to like blokes that will hold you accountable to a higher standard, know how to hold space for you and are empowering you to be a better version of yourself. And again, that's a decision that you need to make, because you can be around a bunch of people and still feel lonely. I've been there.
Yeah.
You can also be in a relationship and feel lonely. So there's a level of connection and there's a level of insight and wisdom and engagement that is exclusive to a certain type of environment. And I feel like the stigma around men's work is starting to change, which is awesome. We're probably still about 3 to 5 years away from it really being dismantled, but it doesn't have to be weird. And you've obviously experienced that firsthand. Now you're leading the charge in that as well. There was like, we weren't standing around in circles, naked, holding each other's dicks, singing Kumbaya, which I think is some people's opinion of men's work.
Yeah. I think that's what the holes in the trees and the kisses.
Yeah. And again, I know a lot of spiritual people who love holding trees and doing those type of things. So sending lots of love to those type of people.
Even David Guetta, like John, the way the spirit man, there is like places for like how far you want to go with it.
Well, that's 100%.
The thing dealing with it. Yeah, I don't understand.
Yeah. And in all honesty, it might be something as simple as going for like a run with your mate and just having a quick check-in after. Like, this is a scale of 0 to 100. I know when I was going through my patch, a really close mate of mine was going through it as well, and he'd never really spoken to anyone properly about it. But we would literally, I can't remember if it was a Tuesday or a Thursday, but we would literally go for a run to get the endorphins going, and then we just have a quick kind of 5 to 15 minute check-in after. Hey, mate, how's your week been? Been a bit flat. How are things going? He's going through a divorce at the time. How's the kind of divorce settling? Just like simple enough stuff, but he felt better for getting the endorphins going from a run and a little bit off his chest in that kind of 5 to 15 minutes that we would talk after. But for some of these blokes, it might just be that 5 to 15 minute conversation that they felt 2% lighter than they did before the conversation. And again, these are skills that I have no idea how we didn't learn at school, e.g. how to really communicate properly, how to have someone seen, emotional intelligence, these skills. I think I would have happily traded in algebra for emotional intelligence, because I don't think I've used algebra since. And this chat between you and I isn't about the fucking school system and how crooked it is, but there's a bunch of skills that would have served us a lot better, and emotional intelligence and communication are one of them, or two of them. But when it comes back to that kind of masculine piece, like, every bloke needs other blokes, every single bloke. And again, there's a type of bloke that I'm talking about, a type of bloke that you can communicate with, a type of bloke that will empower you, a type of bloke that will hold you accountable. And I don't know your age or the age of the people that you're working with, but generally speaking, after the age of 30, blokes' male friendships fall off the cliff. There's a really good book called Billy No Mates by Max Dickens, and I had him on my podcast. And the science over the last 50 years, or the research, is fucking wild in terms of blokes' friendships post 30. They just fall off a cliff. You lose touch with your schoolmates. You start having kids. You're not playing sport anymore. Like, all those things that bonded blokes together in their 20s in particular start to fall away. So, you know, from a masculine point of view, the masculine can easily start to wear thin because you're just spending time, if we're talking heterosexual just for this conversation, you're just spending time with your partner. And she probably becomes a little bit more masculine. You probably become a little bit more feminine. And that's part of the reason that this neutral energy in the middle starts to fall, because you're both starting to meet in the middle. For you to have blokes that you can go for a run with, do workouts together, go out for dinner and have deep and meaningful chats, all of those things strengthen the polarity, and polarity being a really important part for kind of chemistry within the relationship. Every bloke needs to be proactive in it. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that happens for blokes over 30 is they start being a or start hanging out with the girlfriend or the wife's girlfriend's partners. All right. So the girlfriends will organize catch-ups, and then the blokes will just tag along and they'll get along with the other partner. But you need to be proactive in going, who are the type of people that I want to hang out with? And how are they making me better as a bloke, as a human? Mm. And again, there's not many blokes that do that. And there's also, at this stage, not many environments that are facilitating that. From where it was 5 years ago, fuck, it's completely different. And it's improved a lot. But for the state of men's mental health and the state of men's connection and things like that, mate, we're just the tip of the iceberg of what needs to be done if we're going to reverse some of the trends that are showing up when it comes to kind of men's mental health and overall well-being.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think women have done well. They have gone through where their upper moment where empowerment, and they're starting to skew off their own direction, some maybe too far in some terms. But
yes,
I mean, for men, the upper moment is just starting to trick through. I was listening to Robert Glover talk about like what he's even seen, and there's definitely more and more open-minded about it and stuff like that, and there's more guys at least going there. So just on the masculine thing, then when you find that you're in that energy, and how well does that actually help the relationship? Like when you're in that energy, can Shannon just drop into her feminine easily?
Dude, and do you need massive. More to-
Yeah,
it's massive. It's what we've noticed is there's probably been four or five little periods where I haven't been in that in a really healthy manner, and we can almost identify when I'm in that because she gets irritable. So I know like the warning signs, because sometimes I don't recognize when I've dropped out of it. There's been a few occasions, and she's just on my case, and she's dictating things and directing things. I know it's when I need to jump back into it, and I know that's when I'm weakening. She's telling me what to do, those type of things, because when I'm in it, I just lead. And it's not from and this is where a lot of people get confused, it's not control and leading are two very different things. And for a lot of women, when I'm working with them about kind of polarity dynamics, they're like, oh, I don't want him to control me. I'm like, we're not talking about control, we're talking about him leading. It's a very different energy. And that's one of the reasons I've noticed with a number of clients where they're resistant to polarity, because they think if I drop into my feminine and he steps into his masculine, he's going to take control. And that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about leading, and leading can look like all types of things. Leading, where's the family? Where are you taking the family? Where are you leading the family towards? Leading can look like leading in the bedroom. Leading can look like you driving instead of being in the passenger. You know, that's one of my weird irks of like when I see blokes in the passenger seat and their partners. I just find it it gets me. I just find it really emasculating. I'm like, mate, if he's drunk or if he can't drive or for whatever reason, but when I see the bloke in the passenger seat, like a little boy and his wife's leading, I'm like, fucking hell, brother. So just those little ways in which you can lead, you can be decisive, you can show up. So there has been a few occasions where I've lost that. And again, when they're generally the times where there's friction in the relationship, when I'm not leading, when I'm not in my mask. And we really don't have much friction in the relationship, but that has been the common thread of the three or four little patches that we've been through. is I wasn't in my masculine when there was friction in the relationship.
It's interesting. So I was on a call with Saudi Khan, that psychologist. Have you seen much of her stuff?
Yeah.
A while ago, yeah. I was on a call with her a while ago, and she's the woman is there to test you, always will test you.
Yeah.
Right? And when you are, she's testing more and it's more frequent than usual, it's because you aren't stepping up. It's literally, it's that simple. It's literally just take some level of leadership of what's going on. And you'd see, and one of the guys, we were on a call today, he was talking about it, and he done that, and like the immediate change in the woman, it wasn't even forced, it was just natural. She was just able to drop in and become that supportive woman beside him. And I was like, whoa, that's cool. Actually.
What's really interesting about that, and I've noticed this pattern myself, is the people-pleasing element of me actually softens when she becomes rigid and actually makes it worse. Go into this kind of anxious mummy boy dynamic where I'm like, oh, I'm sorry for it. Like that pattern. So she actually gets even more rigid and more in a masculine. And I see this with a lot of blokes. In that moment, they build resentment and they almost like surrender, when really that friction moment is the opportunity for you to step back into it, not from a place of resentment, but just a recalibration, okay, back into the like masculine, back into the leadership, back into kind of leading, as opposed to bowing down in a very passive way. And when I say bowing down, this isn't about the power, control, manipulation, anything. It's literally just the dynamic that serves a normal heterosexual couple in terms of the masculine, generally speaking, being in a masculine energy. So yeah, it's interesting. It's something that's actually been sitting with me recently, and it's few and far between, but it's still a really interesting piece that kind of shows up every now and then for me.
And so just to pick up here then, when it comes to, say, your life by design, number one, if the guys are listening and they're like, this life by design sounds interesting, what is it you would say to them to actually start that journey?
What I see is one of the biggest challenges is people on the treadmill of life. I'll get to that. Bro, you never fucking get to it. And then 1, 3, 5 years go and you're like, oh, I'm still doing the same shit. So really, for a lot of people, they're like, oh, I'll make change on the holidays when you got 2 weeks off and you're fucking exhausted from your life and you've got no energy to do anything. So the way that I think about it is that it's a slow, for most people, changing of the guard. And when you're looking at life by design, the way that I really think about it is designing your perfect week. And that might be starting with like a date night with your partner every week. That might be allocating one night a week to catching up with friends. That might be Shani and I have a money date each week where we go through our finances. Like it can just be, it might be another thing that I have is like not having any clients after 3 p.m. because I go for a walk every afternoon. Most of those walks with Shani. Like just taking back your control and your power and making those subtle shifts to your life. And when you just start to really bring awareness to, do I actually like this? And you can break free from what your mum thinks, your dad thinks, society thinks, then you become free. And for a lot of people, it's like they're in this perpetual cycle of modern day slavery. It just looks different to what it did 400 years ago. Like they are they're in a form of slavery. And they're going to work for the next 30 or 40 years for someone that they don't like, to buy things that they don't need, to impress people that they don't care for.
That's super interesting. I heard a quote recently about, I think it was from Viktor Frankl or one of these guys, a psychologist, and he was saying that, talking about the matrix of the mind.
Yeah.
And the matrix that we actually trap ourselves in.
Mm.
And it's obviously there's the external, whatever's going on in the world is going on in the world. But we don't take enough responsibility to get rid of the matrix that we built in our own minds that were in this identity and this life. And when I heard that, I was like, fuck. I was like, that was a huge breakthrough moment for me. It's like, what matrix, what construct have I created in my own mind, let alone the world? What have I created in my own mind? And how am I changing that? Or am I actually being run by this box that I created in my head? So it's super fascinating.
You look at the last 3 years, and depending what side of the fence you sit on in terms of your beliefs as to what's unfolded, a lot of people were fearful of losing their freedom with good reason.
Yeah,
bro, you're not free. You're not free every day because you're in a set of prison bars in your mind. So yeah, we have freedom in terms of travel and everything else. And I talk a lot about freedom and flexibility in the lifestyle that I choose to live, but also the freedom between your two ears. There's a lot of people that aren't anywhere near free in that way. And that's a big part of the work that I do with hypnosis, NLP, and even the body from a breathwork point of view. Like you're, for many people, their minds is controlling them, as is their body. They're a passenger to the emotions that run their show. That's a big component of my work, is taking back ownership. And two ways in which that starts is learning to master your mind and also your nervous system and what's happening in your body as well.
You actually cannot, and you cannot actually create transformation without that unlocking that peace in the body.
That's
If it's
nah,
all
dude.
intellectual work, it doesn't work. It,
100%.
the body stores. I've had my greatest shifts from a breathwork class or a
Yeah.
breathwork session. Now, on top of that, some of the shifts would have come from an intellectual point of view where I would have gotten a breakthrough in a coaching session. It would have literally, just, do you know, ever walk up to a coach and say, you want to hit somebody? It's so triggering, like nearly. And then when you go through that kind of an emotional roller coaster in a breathwork session, along that's when you, okay, and whatever comes out, let it be. And I found those, but hand in hand, that's how it happens, you know.
Dude, 100%. Yeah, it's, yeah, if you go, I'm sure people have heard this 1,000 times, but if you're going to master your life, you've got to master your mind. You're not going to be able to do it otherwise. And it would be a lot harder to make any change if you don't really understand what's going on in your mind. And that's been massive for me. And that starts with awareness. Yeah, brother, it's, yeah, when you can really create your life by design, it, life's fucking, it's obvious, isn't it? Life's fucking good.
I see you there looking up and like when you create life by design, you're
I
just looking at
know.
what you created, like, you know.
Yeah,
You're looking there into the
but that one of the reasons I can't enjoy these type of conversations and sharing my story is because at my rock bottom, obviously knowing my values helped me get through, but also what helped me get through was examples of other people's stories. So Tony Robbins, it was down to his last $7. It was a Lewis House that spent months sleeping on his sister's couch. Like those were the moments where I was like, fuck, okay, they've been here or they've been somewhere similar. So when I think about opportunities to share my story, all I hope is that one person who, when they hear this, is deep in it, is like, all right, this dude's been able to turn things around. That's all I need to be able to hold. There's times where you've got nothing to hold on to but someone else's story. And it served me really well. I just hope it serves someone that listens to this.
And just to finish on that there, one of the best things around being or around other guys, especially if you put yourself in a room with super successful guys and they talk about struggles that you're having,
Yeah.
man, there's something about that's
Oh,
like
you
he's
feel
gonna be
seen.
near.
It's like being
Don't
normal. Yeah. It's like when
yeah.
someone can normalize it for you and
Oh.
neutralize your experience, you're like, oh, thank fuck, I'm not the only one.
Yeah, it's incredible. And you can walk away. You don't even have to say anything, it's just you're hearing them and
Yeah.
they might even be way further down the line than you. I've had it myself. I cop onto the waters and I hear them and they're literally talking about what I'm wanting. I'm like, fuck, man, Jesus Christ. And that's the
Dude.
power of it, really, to have that
Yeah.
input. So, Blake, man, thank you so much for coming on. Guys, if you want to check out, I know some of you are listening in Australia. So, if you want to check out Blake Ward Thompson on IG, shoot him a message. And yeah, thanks very much.
Mate, great to be here and love hearing about where you're heading and your journey as well. Yeah, I'm stoked for you, brother.
Cheers.